Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to Roguecast number 173. Dave, it's just you and me this week.
It's empty in here.
I know.
Because Nick has chosen to go on vacation.
He went to the beach. He went to the beach, so I had to get up early.
Yep. And Diamond even hosed us a little bit with some late boxes this week, which by the time you're hearing this, hopefully I think we'll have already gotten and put up on the wall.
Everything will be here. We were missing like 4 or 5 books. As a result, like, I didn't get to read Injustice 2, which probably would have been my pick list.
Secret Empire was not yet in.
Secret Empire isn't in yet.
Give that a shot.
Although we did.
But I'm gonna honorarily pick that among my staff picks for Nick.
For Nick.
For no, even though I haven't really been following it closely.
Nah, man. He on the beach. He doesn't get any picks.
Sorry.
Take that back. Nobody listen to that pick.
Yeah, that's right. And if you see a copy of Secret Empire, destroy it.
Yeah, you know what? That's a bad idea. It's a bad idea. Okay, so... we're still in lots of crazy events coming in the summer. So,
yes.
King of Tokyo this weekend, come out and play that. There's some prizes and stuff. It'll be our last Gaming with Rogues with Chris as an employee, as he is leaving us go to a full time job.
He's going on vacation too.
He's going on permanent vacation.
Yeah, well, mob style. But he's going to continue to run some events for us.
Yeah, we hope we'll still see him up here for Gaming with Rogues from time to time.
Yep.
You never fully get out of the family, Dave.
That's true. That's really true.
Ladies' Night is going to be back-to-back. It's going to be July 29th, which is at... If you come in about 8 o'clock, it's a pajama-themed. You can go find all the details on the website. Teal is running that. Obviously not me.
Yep.
She's going to show a movie, I believe, 10 Things I Hate About You, After Hours.
Yep.
So come on out for that.
Jammy Jams.
And then the next week is the Queertastic-themed Ladies' Night, which is August 5th.
Yep.
I don't know what they're doing for that.
Okay.
August 12th is our 10th anniversary party and grand reopening, so we will have discount on everything, and we will have comics trivia, we'll have activity books for the kids, we will have a game demo during the day, all kinds of stuff. It's all up on the website. You can check it out.
Yeah. At this point, definitely get your teams together. We want to see some good competitive teams.
Yep.
Of comics trivia. Well, what's the number on that? What are they?
I think 4-person teams will read.
Okay,
for.
Yeah.
But if people don't have a team, they can come and we'll put them in teams.
That's true. And we've been working on the questions, and I'm not going to say too much about it, but they are, some of them are kind of hard, like the kind of thing where I'm like, one or two people in a group of four might know this. But I feel like a fair number of them are ones where you could, like, show off some knowledge on.
We're trying to make it so everybody have a good time. Not everyone can come in and feel frustrated.
Yeah, we're not trying to crush your hopes and dreams.
No. Nope.
But it's going to be fun questions, though. They're going to be super cool. And I'm going to enjoy asking them because I love that stuff.
Yep. And then we'll have Gaming with Rogues again. And then we'll have the Rogues Gallery Pride Party.
Yep.
So kind of a busy month in August.
Yes. In September, everybody will take a nap.
Yep, and September is staple.
Yep. My plan, of course, was to take a nap after we finished moving, but that didn't happen.
Dave, I wouldn't plan on any naps.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah, it never gets quiet around here anymore.
What about the long winter's nap I was planning?
Nope, no long winter's nap. We don't have winter here in Texas.
That's a fair point. Plus, we have to sell the stuff in the holidays.
Yes, exactly. All right, so just a little bit of news this week. I expect next week we'll see the flood of San Diego news.
Right. Brace yourself.
So, yes, the winter of news is coming,
yes, San Diego winter is coming.
Yes. So the Wrinkle in Time trailer dropped.
Yep.
This is by Anna DuVernay, who did Selma.
Oh, okay.
And who at one time was, I believe, in line for Black Panther, and then that didn't work out, and now it's Ryan... I can't remember his name.
I don't remember it either.
The guy who directed Creed.
Right, yeah. Which, based on that, could be extremely awesome.
Yep.
Randy, I had seen the trailer for Wrinkle in Time. What you just watched it? What's your thoughts?
I like it. I think it looks really good. It's got that slightly YA adventure vibe that I feel like Harry Potter had.
Mm-hmm. There's kind of an interestingly, I don't want to say like ominous tone about it, but like it's the sort of the threat is real as it is in the book and the nice graphic novel that they did a few years ago.
Yep.
They did interesting. I don't know who did the cover. It sounded like Fiona Apple or Lord or somebody like that doing that kind of a slightly eerie cover of "Sweet Dreams" from the Eurythmics.
Yep.
Let's see. You got Oprah Winfrey as like Miss What or Miss Witch or something like that.
Miss What's It? Is that her name?
It's one of those ones. There's three. Mm-hmm. There's three witches type people.
Who dat? And
yes,
over there.
Yes.
And which one is on first?
but she looked like she was doing a pretty good job as the enigmatic type.
Yep.
Let's
she tells them to be warriors, which I feel like is something Oprah would actually tell people.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Like, go be warriors. Here's your car.
Let's see. What else? Chris Pine is in it, and he's in, as you noted, he's in everything now.
Chris Pine is in everything. In fact, I'm not sure, but I was watching a video of my kids, and I swear Chris Pine was in the background.
He's a handsome man.
Yeah.
Let's see. What was he in? Wonder Woman, and what else recently?
Wonder Woman, Star Trek.
Star Trek.
He's Captain Kirk and Steve Trevor. That's a couple big roles.
Yeah, and there was something else he was in just recently. I found myself liking Chris Pine more than I used to.
I've also worn Chris
Pine. I think I found, maybe it was because his Kirk was supposed to be brash and cocky, and I'm like, ease down, buddy.
But his Steve Trevor was good.
Yep, and honestly, he was the Kirk. I think he was the Kirk that the movie wanted him to be.
Yes.
So that was never a problem with him.
It was a failure of those movies, among many other failures of those movies.
Randy's going after that, but if you're among the 90% of people who probably liked it, don't you pay any attention to him.
Dave, you're not going to shred the Star Trek movies with me?
No.
I know you don't like them.
No, I warmed to them a little bit.
Did you?
Yeah, like in the sense of them as their own things.
But we still don't like Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, but I mean, we both thought it was
actually, we both really
good.
We both like Spider-Man.
Randy's really looking for something to hate. We'll get to it, Randy. There's going to be some DC stuff coming up.
You're right.
You start slavering for that. But yeah, like, I feel like I saw, maybe it was just seeing some slightly more dramatic chops or a little more nuance in Wonder Woman.
He's got a beard in this.
He does.
It makes him different. A serious actor.
Actually, he's like the professor, right? Is he like their dad? Their dad who goes missing or something?
Could be. I have read this novel, and I've read this graphic novel, and I cannot for the life of me remember what it's about.
Yeah, it does have a certain kind of ephemeral quality to it.
But the feeling is, when I read the graphic novel, I don't feel like it did. Like, the story reads very clearly, but for whatever reason, it won't stick in my head.
Right. Well, there is almost these sort of, like, dreamlike vistas and stuff in it, as I recall. Yeah. And it's not always, like, it doesn't always necessarily feel super pinned down, even if they are in a specific location.
It does look really cool. The crazy, like, Stepford cul-de-sac that they go to is pretty cool and creepy. The look of it is good.
Yeah, there was a lot of it's sure going to have sort of grand visuals. It almost reminded me of Julie Taymor when she does movies, but she's also known for her Broadway stuff like The Lion King, where you
and Spider-Man.
I'm trying to make a point here. she does these really lush visuals that are kind of astonishing to see, and I feel like it looks like there's going to be a lot of that to this one.
Yeah.
What is it? It's Disney, right? Disney
yeah,
producing.
Yeah, Disney. Yeah.
So that seems fairly appropriate for them. Sometimes I worry a little bit. Sometimes that they might be a little bit like their live action adaptations of their animated movies, a little too kind of like just bland a little bit. Like a little. Yeah. This is a fair, interesting version that probably doesn't need to exist, but was all right. Yeah, I want it to be better than all right.
But like Jungle Book was great.
Yeah, that's true. But what else?
I don't know what else. I didn't see Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. I know some people like that quite a bit. We'll see.
I didn't see Cinderella. They did live-action Cinderella, right?
Yep, that was Kenneth Branagh, and it was all right.
Okay. I did not see The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
They didn't do that yet.
No, but originally it was live-action. I haven't seen that one either. I did not see Little Mermaid, which I don't think they've finished yet. Haven't seen Aladdin, which they're casting now, which I can't see. Haven't seen Lion King, because that hasn't come out yet either. Basically, I haven't seen the ones I haven't made
yet. I feel like a faux sort of, not quite one, but Maleficent is in that ballpark.
Yeah, that was solid.
I liked it. It was, that one was, you know, a live-action version of Sleeping Beauty. I don't know if they consider it like one of the adaptations or not, since it's not really, you know, it was definitely the villain's perspective.
Yeah.
Are they going to eventually do a Sleeping Beauty? I'm sure if the money was there, they would sort of reinvent that a little bit. They're obviously doing pretty well with these.
Yeah.
What else we got?
All right. So they're doing Green Lantern Earth 1.
Right, I think folks here have generally been pretty happy, I think, with the Earth 1 series that had
What, Superman?
Batman and Superman. And Teen Titans. And Wonder Woman.
I was going to say there was at least three.
Yeah. So I have mostly not been into these.
Yeah, I couldn't quite get into them either. But
I like the Wonder Woman one a lot.
The Superman one in particular, interestingly, because you would think it would be like the Batman one, but the Superman one in particular seemed to take off a lot.
But it's been a while since we've seen one, and I thought maybe the whole project was dead.
Yeah, in general, this is, for those who haven't seen it, this was like a sort of generally once-a-year graphic novel, or every 2 years,
yep.
That worked somewhat like Marvel's old, Ultimates line that started in the year 2000, where it was kind of like reconceiving these characters as if they had been created in the modern age. You know, what would be a ground-up rethink of Superman, a ground-up rethink of Batman? Like, their Batman, for instance, was... very much more of a normal guy who had to actually be like Alfred was in the SAS or former SAS.
Yeah.
More closer to the Alfred of Gotham now. Very clearly influential on the Gotham TV show.
Is he Cockney?
I don't remember, to be honest. I just know that he like had like his SAS core tattoo on, and you know, he was definitely a hard ass in the comics.
What if it was the same old man Alfred, but he had that tattoo? And he was like old man Alfred being like... Just with a tattoo.
Just kind of acting tough.
Yeah. Hello, sir. I'll beat you.
But they did... he actually like trained Bruce in this one, which was like something that they hadn't really touched on and is also now kind of a part of Gotham.
Yep.
So they're doing a Green Lantern one.
Yes. The Green Lantern one is weirdly crazy sci-fi. The notion is that...
Well, that doesn't sound crazy. Green Lantern has a foot in sci-fi, even if it's more space opera.
No, it's crazy sci-fi because it's basically... Gabriel Hardman is the writer and artist, and he's the guy who's been doing Invisible Republic for Image.
Yep.
And this sounds like he is... he also did Interstellar. He did some of the storyboards for that.
Yep.
And it sounds like all this stuff combined is what sort of influenced him to do a very sci-fi take.
Right, and you're thinking, so, I think when you're saying it, you're thinking like hard sci-fi. Yeah. A little bit more, at least more of a footnote in that.
Well, it's sort of futuristic is the weird thing. You think of these as being, even though they're not technically shared universe, you think of them as being...
In the present, generally.
They could have.
Or, right.
But this, yeah, he's in like a... He is a asteroid miner for some kind of Earth conglomerate. And then he discovers this ring... And that the maybe there's a Green Lantern Corps that's been wiped out in all the different galaxies, and he has to basically sort of go to a different universe and restart them before the Manhunters wipe them out, or something like that.
That's a pretty different take. It definitely sounds like they almost wanted to build like the first movie of it, like as a as a mystery, the mystery of the Lantern Ring as investigated. I wonder how much of it's going to like take place in space. If we're far enough along that we have asteroid mining going on, that feels like something that's like bare minimum like 60 or 80 years out from now.
Yeah.
I thought I remembered reading somewhere that also, in addition to just changing him to essentially like a, they say miner there, but I think, is he like effectively an astronaut?
Well, they say his pedestrian life and wasted potential, so it's like a...
Oh. He's like a guy who, like, didn't live up to...
He's a smart, capable person with a space and science background who has a lot of untapped potential. He's going to approach everything from the perspective of a scientist. That is a very different take on Hal Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah, Hal Jordan's always been the... He is the cocky pilot stereotype that has two big eras, the 60s and the 80s with Top Gun.
Yeah.
And
it's a weird take. I don't know that I love it, but as an alternate universe, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think I'd at least be interested to check it out. The preview art I saw looked pretty cool. There's a bird outside our door right now that sounds like it wants to break in and kill us.
I don't think it's turning up on the mic, but if it is, that's what that sounds
like. Yep, it's like cacawing.
If not, it just sounds like you're a crazy person who picked up on birds.
Well, Randy, if you just back me up on the bird fear.
I don't hear a bird. I don't know what he's talking about, folks. He's got a wild, crazy look in his eyes. okay, moving on to the big story of the week. Doctor Who, I don't know if you've heard this in the internet because people don't really talk about it.
Yeah.
But Jodie Whittaker is going to play the 13th Doctor. I don't know if you know this. Jodie Whittaker is a woman's name.
Whoa.
Right?
Jodie is a trick name, though, because there can also be a man Jodie's.
That's true. and Whittakers are of all sexes.
But I believe she's a femme Jodie.
She's a femme Jodie. So, it's funny because everybody on my friends list is super excited about this and, like, preemptively attacking the people who are...
The backlash. The backlashing against the backlash.
I haven't actually seen the backlash, which is good. Yeah. It means I've got the right friends.
Yeah.
I did poke around
a little bit.
I saw
some of the backlash. And it's super ugly.
Yeah.
And probably the main thing people should be taking away from this is she was amazing on...
Broadchurch.
On Broadchurch, yep. Which is a murder mystery miniseries.
Who was she in Broadchurch? Is she the mom?
I think she was the lead investigating character, the mom.
No, she's not the lead investigator.
Was she not? Oh, okay.
Not the lead investigator. That's a different actress. She's okay. I was thinking she might
I never
be the
saw
mom.
The sequel to Broadchurch.
I think she may be the mom of the kid who disappeared or whatever.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I would broadly say everybody in Broadchurch was great.
Yeah, that's true.
And you should just go like watch Broadchurch right now.
I agree. She was also in Attack the Block, which I saw and don't remember.
I know a number of friends who are fans of that,
yep.
But I have not seen it, so I've got no comment. I know it's like, did somebody notable direct that?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But at any rate, she's got a new showrunner, Chris Chibnall, who I don't know who that is, but the new showrunner and executive producer, which I know a lot of people have not been as happy with Moffat in the tail end of Doctor Who, so...
Right. They liked him sometimes as a writer, but not as a showrunner. Yeah, I forgot that this is accompanied by a showrunner, so we're expecting to see kind of a change of tone or direction as well. Honestly, I sort of fell off Doctor Who a few years ago, and I don't know if any particular casting would like make me super hype unless it was like somebody who was like a very well-known, like if it was Idris Elba or whatever, like somebody like really like a big name actor.
Yeah.
As it is, I will probably try and catch this, but I just haven't quite been in that Doctor Who mode. So I'm happy with the casting and stuff like that. I just don't know, like I'm watching any Doctor.
I went off the Peter Capaldi stuff. I just wasn't feeling it.
Yep.
And so this will bring me back to give another watch. I would like to see, and I think it's going to be something different. So
I did hear that among Capaldi people that. Well, there's some people who've liked him from the beginning,
yeah.
But there's also, I think, among some of the skeptics, I think the sense is that the last year or more have been really good.
That's what I've heard, too. So. I've heard the last couple of years, and maybe at some point I'll go back to it, if only there weren't a billion other things to watch on TV.
But sometimes you might get in a Whovian mood.
I might. Just like Bombshells start out as like a line of... DC Bombshells started as a line of like statues and figures and that kind of thing,
right.
And became a comic series... The same is true of the spectacularly expensive Gotham City Garage statues.
If you haven't seen this, go ahead and Google, what is it, Gotham City Garage, will probably turn it up, right?
There's like a Wonder Woman, a Catwoman, and I think maybe a Harley Quinn. They're like on customized motorcycles. They are awesome looking, like $300 statues.
Yeah. If I can't remember, is there a futurism to the motorcycles?
It's actually more of a...
Or is it like a retro futurism?
It's more of a retro futurism.
But like imagine the kind of the coolness of the Akira bike, but you know, with some of the lines of stuff of like, you know, older cycles and all that.
So the pitch on this one is that it's an alternate universe where Lex Luthor reigns supreme over an idyllic Gotham City that's been renamed the Garden. In exchange for peace, all he asks for is unwavering loyalty. He's got advanced Lex's tech that networks everything together in a pseudo-hive mind, and Defiance is squashed by his elite squad of overseers led by Batman. So
oh,
Batman's
weird.
A bad guy. And Kara Gordon, a secret Kryptonian, an employee of Lex, drives into the wild wastelands where she meets other rebels like Big Barda, Harley Quinn, and Hawkgirl. They form a biker gang, perfect for the apocalypse, and set about to reclaim Gotham City for the people.
It sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds super fun.
I don't know how I feel about Batman as a bad guy. I like Lex Luthor as the big bad. I'll have to see how they do Batman and whether he's or not he might be a guy who might be turned at some
point. I
will
say, they note this in the article on IO9, which is interesting, that the creative team is predominantly male, which is kind of a weird call because the thing with Bombshells is it is like written by like Marguerite Bennett and has a female slant to it, and I feel like they probably should use some more female voices in behind the scenes.
Yeah, I guess I assume that would probably be the case there. Yeah. But I'm interested enough in the idea that I just kind of want to see what they do with it. Essentially, I guess we're getting a, like, not quite post-apocalyptic, but a sort of dystopian biker gang tank girl superhero girls.
So the writers are Jackson Lensing and Colin Kelly. I don't know them at all.
Yep.
Brian Ching is illustrating the first issue and says they're going to have a rotating artist. It's a digital first series, just like Bombshells.
Yep.
So it's going to hit digital first in August, and then it's going to hit print for us in October. So
I know that some people sort of missed Bombshells and have ended up picking it up in trade paperback.
Yeah.
So if you kind of want to be on what could be the next generation of that kind of taking off. Then yeah, you should probably watch for the single issue when that hits.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious about it. When I saw those, I was like, oh, I kind of want to read a story in this setting.
Yeah,
I will get it, so that's good. Finally, we want to say Man, Monday was a little bit of a rough day. We lost two giants in the same day.
Yeah.
We lost Martin Landau.
Yep.
Who, I don't know... I know him from, of all things, I think I remember him from, like, Entourage?
Was he in there?
Yeah, I think he was, like, a producer that E works with later on.
Did you ever see Ed Wood, Randy?
Never saw Ed Wood.
So he famously played Bela Lugosi in that. Went during his, like, you know, ailing, kind of pathetic, even, like, heroin-addicted days.
Yeah.
You know, where... what do you call it? Johnny Depp as Ed Wood is portrayed as kind of giving him his last shot at glory, even as he's kind of sinking in despair. It's the best, I think, dramatic movie that, even though there's a lot of comedy, the best dramatic movie that I think Tim Burton did, and Martin Landau won an Oscar for it.
Yep.
And he's amazing in it. If you want to see him, kids, cover your ears. If you want to see him call Boris Karloff a cocksucker, this is the movie for you. I mean, he's an actor sort of, I think, a little bit before my generation.
Yeah.
But I know him for that. I know him for the Woody Allen movie Crimes and Misdemeanors, which, although I've only seen it once, it immediately skyrocketed to being among my favorites.
Yep.
And I would hugely recommend that to people. A friend of mine was saying he was on Space 1999.
He was, as Commander John Koenig.
Yeah. I think he was, you know, he was the sort of respected character actor who kind of brought a little bit of gravitas and, you know, some professionalism to, I'm sure, a bunch of young punks.
He was also on Mission Impossible, notably, and Gunsmoke, apparently.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
He was a staple of the sort of the early golden age of... I don't know if that's quite considered the golden age of TV, but... But at least probably Gunsmoke is.
Yeah, he's one of those actors you would show, especially older, you would see him turn up in things.
Yep.
And then George Romero died.
Yeah, so it's really a genre icon there.
Yeah. Romero, of course, you know, Dawn of the Dead and all that kind of thing.
Yep. He, he made other movies, and some of them were you know, had degrees of success, like The Crazies, and these are also movies that have been remade recently, somewhat recently. But his biggest contribution is for sure the modern zombie.
Yep.
You could probably trace it back to his inspiration for the original Night of the Living Dead, which was what do you call it? I Am Legend.
Right.
He was I believe what I've read is that he was going to do a movie adaptation of that, and he started working on it, but like he couldn't get the rights. Or maybe he just changed his mind about making it a direct adaptation. But he took that sort of vampires take over the world, which is at its basis what I Am Legend is.
Well, spoilers.
And retooled them as these, I guess they called them ghouls in the original Night of the Living Dead.
Yep.
All modern zombie conceptions, Walking Dead, Resident Evil.
Literally all of them.
Literally all of them came from the success of his vision in Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, which invented the subgenre of like the mall survivalist thing.
Yeah.
You probably played it in board games, video games. Yep. I mean, and you know, his other big thing, of course, aside from like, was that he had this satirical undercurrent to a lot of his stuff.
Yeah.
One might say it wasn't always subtle, but I think a lot of people could watch the original Dawn of the Dead, and if they didn't think about it, wouldn't, you know, particularly walk away with it. But, you know, he had this notion that they hole up in the mall, and like the zombies kind of smash into the mall, well, even at some point, even where there's not food, and they just kind of wander around.
Yeah.
And they realize that they're kind of living out memories of what was important to them, and so it's like they're like they still have that urge to consume goods, even if it's just like walking around aimlessly. It's pretty good stuff. And for me personally, that was one of those horror movies that was formative for me.
Yeah.
I saw it when I was too young. It scared the hell out of me, and I was also fascinated with it because in like a way it was also snuck in being an action movie.
Yeah.
You had heroes who eventually, you know, weren't just running from the monsters, but finding ways to fight them.
Yeah.
Had kind of a bleakness to it and an end times quality that there's not too many movies, you know, like... Maybe The Thing from John Carpenter and other horror movies sometimes touch on, but that was for sure the first one that I'd really ever seen it in, and this does not really have a happy ending.
No.
It has a sort of maybe some people survived ending.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
Sad to see legend go. He was, in his time, acknowledged as a legend. He got his
He got his due.
Due.
Yeah. I think that's true, and that's good.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, July 19th, and again, Nick is not here, so I'm going to go ahead and, as is our tradition when Nick is not here, I'm going to pick some books for him.
Yes.
And Nick's picks will be Secret Empire number 6.
Yeah.
And Batman whatever number it
26,
is.
26, 27?
23, 29, 37, whatever it is, that's what he'd pick.
Yeah, the War of Jokes and Riddles part 3.
7.
I'm pretty sure it's actually part 3, but Randy says 7.
I'm going with, is it Price is Right Rules? No, Price is Right Rules, I would guess 1.
You'd guess 5.
Because you guess the young, yeah. So I'm going
reverse. I hope our trivia contest isn't going to be like this.
I'm going Bizarro Price is Right Rules.
Oh, I should have recognized.
Yes.
I actually think those are reasonably potential picks for him. We'll know next week. We're going to tell you if we profiled him correctly.
Yes. And if we did not, we're going to force him to say that we did. Okay, so my pick this week is an Image book, Lazarus X plus 66.
That's a weird numbering or name.
What it refers to is the year zero of when all the changes that made the Lazarus future come about is...
Sort of the shit hit the fan.
...is year X.
Yep.
And we are 66 years past that.
Right.
And the reason that Rucka did that is because then he's not sort of dating himself.
Right.
The calendar has changed, so they don't have to worry about that. Like, the families have changed the calendar.
It's a smart idea, yeah. They can't say it's the year 2033, because eventually we're going to reach 2033 and people are going to be sad that we aren't in this horrible dystopian future, except they won't be.
Except they won't be, because we will be.
We'll be in a horrible dystopian future.
And we won't be reading comics anymore.
That's right. We'll be slaves.
Yes, we'll all be slaves. But it won't be like Escape from New York, which I think takes place in the magical future year of 1992.
Something like that, yeah. Or 1999, or,
yeah,
you
something
know.
Like that, yeah. Yeah. At any rate, because Michael Lark wanted a break from doing Lazarus, they decided they were going to do a miniseries. And so what they did was this six-issue miniseries called Lazarus X Plus 66 that focuses on some of the characters besides Forever Carlyle and the family and that kind of thing. Some of the sort of non-movers and shakers of this world in a way.
Yep.
And so this first issue is a focus on Casey Solomon, a girl who was lifted up by Lazarus or by Forever herself to become one of their elite military unit, the Daggers.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back and shows her in her training. Now, we already know that she becomes a Dagger because she was in the previous storyline.
The Daggers are sort of like the general sort of private armies of the 1% rulers.
Although the Daggers are particular to the Carlyle. They are special forces operators. These are the Navy SEALs, basically.
The Navy SEALs of this particular house.
And so this is all... Ruck is a guy who loves this military bodyguard stuff. He's studied up on a lot. And he clearly has done some research. I remember Ruck is also a gamer dude. And I remember specifically when I used to play GURPS. They had GURPS Special Ops.
Yeah.
And they did a lot.
You think he was all over that?
There were a lot of write-ups about like what exactly went into the training and what you had to be able to do and how special these soldiers were. And I think he may have internalized some of that. Because this is basically about just utter hell week training. Full Metal Jacket in the Lazarus world.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
And this whole issue is Casey Solomon and her training. And they open with these the three sergeants looking at this wall of pictures, all their 100 men and women who volunteered, mm-hmm. and how they expect to have like 6 left at the end.
Right.
And then it is all this hardcore training as they're pushed to their limits. And we see that Casey Solomon is sort of special. And it's very much in Rucka's wheelhouse, the sort of tough female character.
Yeah.
Military honor and that kind of thing.
I kind of like stories like this. It's like a subgenre, almost like the way there are prison movies and prison stuff.
Yep.
The subgenre of the winnowing, the training that cuts down to just a few left. There was an old issue of G.I. Joe. Did you ever read this, Randy, that showed how G.I. Joe, some new troops get trained?
I've read every issue of G.I. Joe, as have you.
So you know the one I'm talking about. It was later characters when there was Budo, I believe, the samurai, and I forget who the other guys were, but they were the recruits that made it. I also remember there was an unnamed dude in a shirt that, because your white shirt had your name on it, your code name, and there was a dude who was meant to flunk out, and his name was Funky.
Yep.
And I always thought, I wish Funky had made it. I wanted to know what his thing was.
His primary military special was with dance.
And getting down.
His secondary military specialty was beatboxing. He was funky.
You know what I remember broke him in it? To avoid exhaustion, your one's endurance. Endurance. They had to watch driver's ed training films in an non-air conditioned schoolroom or something for like all day. And eventually he just cracked and he's like, I quit. After like 8 hours of training films.
Nice.
Anyway, that was a weird divergence, but
totally about Lazarus.
That sounds really good.
And anyway, notably, the artist on this is Steve Lieber, who has worked with Greg Rucka on
arguably his first
Whiteout.
Big project.
Yep. Yep.
His kind
of
breakout.
Absolutely his first project. That was the first thing Rucka ever did in comics.
First thing he ever did was an original graphic novel?
Yeah.
Huh.
He was a novelist.
Yeah. A few people are like given that sort of that amount of rope to hang themselves.
I don't know. People who are novelists are, because they've already proved themselves in other
I suppose so.
So novelists and movie people, all those guys can usually come in
Steve Lieber's a damn good artist.
Yep,
like any book is lucky to have him. He previously did Superior Foes of Spider-Man,
yep.
And prior to that had done a bunch of other good stuff.
Yeah. But this is really good. I guess the next issue is going to be about the Lazarus from the Moray family. And I don't know if it's all going to be Lieber or if it's different artists, but it's a really good issue. Especially if you've been reading Lazarus, but even if you haven't and you're curious about sort of this world, this is a good place to jump on.
Right. It actually, that sounds like it would be an interesting one for people who have not been, because you kind of get the training stuff and you get a glimpse of this world, and then if you like it, you can go buy the big hardcovers and be cool like us.
To be clear, there is no one in this issue named Funky.
There could be, though.
But there's not.
Aww. I guess I won't be reading
it. Dave, what is your pick?
My pick is another one of the X-Men relaunch books. I guess probably one of the last few that are going to be coming out.
Maybe the last one of this round, yeah.
Yeah. This is Astonishing X-Men, number one. A title which I completely associate with the Joss Whedon run of some years ago.
Well, he did create it.
He was given the book. And to me, it'll always kind of in my head, or at least right now, it's his book, even though Warren Ellis took over after him and even somebody else, if I'm not mistaken.
That was Whedon's first comic, right? Wasn't it? Or was Buffy his first comic?
Probably, yeah, Frey was, I think, technically his first comic. But his, it was his first non-Buffy-related comic.
Anyway, it's great that he broke in. I wonder whatever happened to that guy.
I don't know. I think he's probably begging for change.
Yep.
But this Astonishing X-Men is really just them repurposing the title. Mildly annoying, but a good comic.
The mildly annoying X-Men was a less popular sale.
these X-Men gather together over sort of a specific threat. It has to do with kind of like the the psychics of the world.
Yeah.
Are being attacked, and I don't know if they're just they're left. It says dying. I don't know if they're actually killed.
Yeah, it looks like maybe the ones who didn't have like a lot of power, but who like went for isolation.
Right. Yeah. If you were like, I hate my mutant power, and I'm just going to hide out. Chances are you're writhing on the ground in pain from this assault right now.
Are you talking to our listeners?
Yes.
If any of them are mutants?
I'm Apocalypse. Apocalypse is not the villain of this piece, and I'm not going to say who it is because it's kind of a neat reveal.
But if you're an X-Men fan, you've probably guessed.
Maybe so. I don't know. They have all kinds of big bads. Psylocke is sort of front and center and under one of the attacks.
Yeah.
And in calling out for a psychic assistance, she ends up latching onto a number of X-Men, not because of, like, it was like
proximity.
Purely proximity. Yeah,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just like, was it Kyle Rayner or whatever getting the Green Lantern originally?
Yep.
There's nearby.
There's a guy peeing in an alley. Let's give him a ring.
Yep.
Actually true. Actually his origin.
Yep. And as I would later learn, when they retconned in Guy Gardner, before he became the super jerk face,
yep.
The original story written in, like, I think the late 60s or early 70s, mm-hmm. was that he was going to... He and Hal Jordan were both equally fearless. He was just a gym teacher at that point, and again, no brain damage, not a super jerk.
Yep.
The ring just chose Hal because it was closer.
Hal was closer.
Yep. And he raised his hand. So what she reaches out to is a very interesting mix of X-Men, all of whom I like or find interesting in this case.
but who are not necessarily haven't worked together in a while or haven't worked together certainly in this particular group, and they are maybe one of the most interesting to me. Bishop,
yeah,
been out of the picture for a little while, but Bishop is in there.
I love Charles Sewell's the writer on this.
Yeah,
and I love Charles Sewell's. I'm not always a fan of the writerly captions. Sometimes they're a little nuts, but I loved his description of what Bishop does and what his particular mission is. I'm like, that's a book I would read.
Yeah,
it's kind of like what they're trying to do with Cable, although it's done better here.
Yeah, I'm gonna read what Randy's talking about. He says they show him he's like poring over books and notes and files and stuff, and he says he spends his days. They're talking about him trying to stop the doomed futures, all the doomed futures he's seen. He spends his days watching, reading, looking for sparks to stamp them out before they grow. He's a soldier, a sentinel against the apocalypse. His war can never be won, and his war can never end. The future always comes. Anyway,
it's a cool concept.
Yeah, their notion of him as the ever vigilant guy who's trying to hold off an apocalyptic ending as long as he can is cool. Also in the mix is Angel or Archangel. There's some discussion of the nature of his.
I liked his twist on Archangel too.
Yep. Working together, interestingly, on Thievery, we have Gambit and Phantom X. The two French-speaking thieves of the X-Men.
Well, what's funny is that they sort of delineated them in a way I've not seen before, where Phantom X is like the professional thief and Gambit's like the street rat.
Yep.
It's kind of fun.
And Phantom X is not really shy about calling it like it is.
No, if you thought Gambit was arrogant.
Yeah. Old Man Logan is one of the sort of the rocks of the group.
Because you have to have Wolverine.
And as is in her way, Rogue.
When did Rogue start flying again? I thought she'd lost all her Carol Danvers powers.
I don't know.
I don't either.
Clearly got returned at some point.
But I'm glad because I like her having those powers.
Maybe when the Phoenix Force did stuff.
Yeah, possibly.
And I think I named all the biggies.
Yeah, that's the team.
You know what? There is a surprise later on, and I won't mention who the surprise is.
Oh, you're right.
There's surprise turnip.
Not a surprise turnip.
Anyway, there's some big action in this as they confront what's going on with Betsy, Psylocke. A lot of these characters, the real fun of the book for me is seeing these characters put in a blender and see what happens when they interact with each other.
Metaphorically speaking.
Nope. look how bloody Wolverine is here. He's clearly in a blender.
Wolverine is the X-Men who could survive being put in a blender.
That's true.
That'd be a weird thing. I guess Arcade would do it.
Charles Sewell has a good mixture of action and characterization. There's not quite in the way it's being used in X-Men Gold, which Rain and I both like,
right.
Where I'm like, oh, this is really fun, like old school power use, but there's some cool uses of powers in here. A promising follow-up, it has sort of a direction. I'm not quite sure, I gather they're going to probably kind of deal with this immediate issue and then sort of say, hey, we're working well together, let's stick together. But I'll be kind of curious if it's a sort of a persistent issue or...
I believe this is the whole notion of this is a rotating team. Charles Sewell is the constant, and then the X-Men will change, the artists will change.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That it's almost anthology-like.
Oh, okay. So this mission might be the all we see of this group.
Yes.
And the next one might have Sunfire and Warpath and Old Man Logan because...
And Maggot and Marrow?
Yeah.
It's not going to be Maggot and Marrow.
Right. But Marvel, but we just...
I believe that's... Yeah.
I'd be all right with that, too, because I feel like... And Charles Sewell will be writing, though, all of this.
Yeah, Charles Sewell's writing.
That's quite the dream project for an X-Men fan.
Who's the first artist? Is it
Jim Leo? Chung, who's
Jim
awesome.
Chung, yeah.
What do we know him from most recently? Young Avengers?
Civil War...
He did do Young Avengers, though, didn't he?
He did do Young Avengers. Yeah. He did another event recently. I mean, he did part of Secret Empire, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A promising first issue, so another win in the category of the X-Men relaunch.
And what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is a book I've endlessly picked, Royal City, from Jeff Lemire. This is issue 5. And, Randy, am I correct? Is this sort of the end of the arc?
The end of the first story arc. This will be the first trade collection.
And, you're kind of dealing with endings when the first page deals with the father of the family as he flatlines in the hospital.
Yep.
What happens next is sort of one of the more unusual events in the entire series. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to really get into what's going on, but there is a...
Is anyone put in a blender?
all the characters are sort of, or many of the major characters are sort of revisited over the course of what happens next. And, this series has had a slight I don't want to say supernatural bent, because there's really only one unusual thing in their world, which is the seeming presence of the ghost of a son, brother, whatever he was to the various family members who died.
Yeah.
I forget actually what he died of, if we know.
He was put in a blender.
do you remember?
I actually don't remember. Maybe he drowned, or maybe he killed himself. We don't really know.
But he's been appearing to various people from throughout the series. Yep. They're kind of, I think, aware he's like almost ghost-like.
Yeah.
But he appears as different ages to them, which I thought was interesting. And it clearly has sort of different meaning in the memories of them. And, you know, in a lot of cases, that's what Royal City is meditating on, is, you know, how our past makes us who we are, and, you know, whether or not we can sort of push through the, you know, throw off the shackles of our past. I have loved its characterization throughout, and this issue was no exception. I was pleased to see it's, you know, by no means the ending, but a lot of interesting stuff happens as a catalyst from that flatlining.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, you know, at this point, I'm basically going to say, if you haven't been reading the book, pick up the graphic novel.
By the way, it's Jeff Lemire week, because Royal City comes out, the conclusion of the first story arc, and the start of the new Descender story arc.
Oh, wow. Watch your back, Tom Taylor.
Yeah.
Lemire Lose Days.
Lemire Lose Days are
back, here. Anyway, so those are my two. Randy, what you got?
All right. My other one is another Image book that I picked. It's Kill the Minotaur number 2. Mm-hmm. This is more story of Theseus in the maze with a bunch of other Athenians and a Cretan. Not a Cretan, but a Cretan.
A Cretan.
And it's basically them inside this maze. He meets up with a mysterious figure and this small group of people, and he's going to try and lead them out. There's bloody death all about them. There's traps. And it's weird. It is very much based on sort of Greek myth, but they've added in elements of it that make it almost like a D&D comic.
Oh, interesting.
And they're sort of hinting at the Minotaur, and nobody believes that it's real, and they're trying to guess at what it might actually be and that kind of thing. It's got really nice art.
In the Image tradition, it's somewhat... what I remember from reading the first issue is somewhat adult-oriented. There's like...
Yeah.
So there's swearing and things like that are, you know... Sometimes when you see books about the past, they kind of... You have that sort of sanitized... You know, if it were a movie, everybody would be speaking in British voices, so that way we would know that they're from someplace that's not America.
Yep.
And there would be sort of a very proper Thor-like speaking. But these guys are a little bit more kind of down-to-earth people.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
More approachable, I think, or maybe more approachable and at least a little bit more modern to our ear.
Yeah, there's definitely some sort of magic and stuff, but it's a very grounded approach, and... the artwork is beautiful, so I definitely recommend it. Other stuff for me this week, Ms. Marvel number 20, which continues to be one of my favorite books. Secret Empire number 6. A bunch of Secret Empire tie-ins. X-Men Gold number 8, which we've been talking about how much we enjoy X-Men Gold, and this was no exception. Doctor Strange number 23, which has Doctor Strange and Kingpin and Spider-Woman and Ben Urich running around the Dark Force Dimension-covered New York City. And it's as much fun as it sounds like, with beautiful art by... Nico Henriken, also Power Man and Iron Fist guest star. U.S. Avengers number 8, which is a focus on Dr. Yinsen's strange daughter, who's one of the members of the team, and sort of what she does when they're in captivity again with Hydra. And on the flip side, you've got the rest of the team is over in France with sort of the resistance of France with French hero Le Peregrine.
Oh, might have looked in on that. I have a weird... I don't want to say quite fondness for Le Peregrine, but one of the earliest kind of books I remember notably was the Marvel Contest of Champions, for which I think he was created, and I kind of enjoyed him.
The other team members include Excalibur from one of the British comics that came out, Captain Britain, of course, Guillotine, who's another French hero, was introduced, I believe, in the new Contest of Champions, and then the God of War Ares. It's an interesting team, and they're doing some fun stuff with it, seeing sort of the resistance against Hydra in Europe.
That's kind of cool.
Also features Squirrel Girl, in case you like that kind of thing. Then we have Daredevil number 24, which has a notable Matt Murdock Foggy story. Totally Awesome Hulk, which is part of the Weapons of Mutant Destruction, and is going to lead to that Weapon H thing that caused everybody to freak out.
Yeah, I want to do a real quick aside about that Weapon H image that you might have seen floating around, folks. It basically looked like a sort of gray Hulk
with like Wolverine's claws popped out, and like he had like kind of like almost like Doomsday, some little bone spurs that like adamantium bone spurs popping out of him.
We saw like three or four people posting like, "Ah, oh, Marvel's finally run out of ideas."
Right. I saw a lot of disgust that it was like a created by committee thing and all this. And now here's the thing: it could be a sucky idea, but my sense is that there's a reasonably high probability that this guy is one of the many weird Weapon X Frankenstein monstrosities from the Weapon X series, where Wolverine and Sabretooth and, like, was it Domino, and I forget who all else is in the group.
Warpath.
Sort of an informal team of former Weapon X refugees who have been, like, been hunted by these really bizarre versions of Weapon X stuff. The Weapon H Hulk with adamantium, or, like, you know, some kind of vat-grown Hulk-type creature sounds 100% like something that would fit in that book, as like the what I have been describing as the level boss of the storyline. Now, if they're like, "Hey kids, you love Wolverine, you love the Hulk. What if they were the same?" If it is that, yeah, that's kind of dumb. I hope that's not what it is.
But you know what? That character would totally sell. So
totally would sell.
People only have.
But I don't.
Blame.
I will say that I don't want something that just sells. I do want it to be good.
Yep.
But I would say that the hue and cry over this one might be a little beyond what is necessary.
Above,
sometimes you actually want to give them a chance to tell their story.
Yeah.
Or maybe this outrage may ultimately work to Marvel and their people's eyes are on them. Yep. So,
clue number two, which we all liked that first issue. And Wildstorm number six, which I continue to enjoy, although it is paced like Warren Ellis' book, which means six issues in, we're about where we should be on issue two.
You know, what's funny is that he's also got the mode where he does single-issue stories that he can be really good at.
Yeah.
I wish sometimes, that he was a little bit more of that Warren Ellis. I think I like that standalone-issue Warren Ellis a little bit over long-form Warren Ellis at times.
I like Warren Ellis on Wildstorm. He's done some of my favorite stuff. And I think that, as I have a fondness for the Wildstorm universe, so when this gets collected, I'm almost certain to buy it. I'm actually really enjoying it.
That's good.
Secret of Weapons number two, which is more of Valiant, sort of weird street-level psyops. Corgi Short Tales number one, which is the adorable fairy dog that is a corgi. It's a bunch of short stories. It's super cute. If you have kids, you should definitely pick that up. And speaking of kids, DuckTales number zero comes out, and it's got a couple short stories, original stories, which stylistically is in the same style as the cartoon that is highly anticipated.
Right. So this is actually a chance to get a first look at sort of that vibe.
Trade-wise, there's U.S. Avengers Volume 1, which I really wound up liking that. It's such a weird concept that, like, Sunspot took over Advanced Idea Mechanics and turned it into American Idea Mechanics, and it's like a spinoff from S.H.I.E.L.D. They've got a Red Hulk that clearly is like a Thunderbolt Ross in, like, witness protection. It is the craziest thing, and I really like it. Batman Team into Adventures, also weird, also great. Everyone loved the Batman TMNT that came out earlier in the year. But this Batman TMNT Adventures that crosses over the animated version of the Turtles and the animated version of Batman was my jam.
Yeah, you liked it over the other one.
I liked it over the other one. And then finally I want to mention Aether, which was this strange archaeologist in a world of magic thing. Has this gorgeous artwork by David Rubin, written by Matt Kent. Weird, crazy, interesting book that I'm looking forward to reading now that's in Collected into a Trade. And has a ton of cool backstory stuff I'm noticing. It's got like design sketches and notes on the story and a little short story.
That's some nice back matter.
Yep, so worth a look. Dave, what else you got?
Since you mentioned Squirrel Girl, I'm going to quick divert and mention that there is a new statue this week.
Yep.
The Marvel Bishoujou statue of Squirrel Girl. Super adorable. Unlike most of theirs, it's not quite like uber sexied up. She's adorable like she should be as she communes with Tippy Toe the Squirrel.
Yes.
Also, you kind of have to see the sheer puffiness of her tail to fully appreciate the adorableness.
Yeah, it's a great statue.
Yep, and I did post a preview image of it on our Facebook, so you can check it out there, even as you listen to this, or just come by and buy it.
The other sort of weird thing we'll have is little cosmic cubes.
Yes.
That Marvel has made to tie into Secret Empire. We're selling them for 50 cents a piece, and they are just, they're little like blue and white cubes of plastic. I thought they might bounce. They're not bouncy. They're just like little solid plastic.
Yep.
But they do glow in the dark.
And you can tell people you have a little bit of the cosmic cube. I'm pretty sure this is wildly dangerous.
Yeah, not a great idea.
That it could result in the destruction of the world.
If Red Skull comes in and gives like $10, he's going to buy like as many Cosmic Cubes as he needs.
Yeah, so if you could, you probably want to get here before Red Skull, I guess.
Yeah, is what that's true. Because we're going to try to hold a one per person, but you know the Red Skull is, and he'll be like, give it to me.
I'm a big spender.
Yeah. He'll probably threaten to shoot Tila or Dave or something, yep. And I'll give him some cubes.
Yeah.
After he shoots one of them to show he's serious.
He's a jerk.
Yeah.
Among the other comics I wanted to mention, somewhat randomly, Green Arrow 27. Mainly wanted to mention this because it was an interesting team up. It is Wonder Woman. And this is the second part of the hard traveling hero storyline they're doing. I think that's basically a series of kind of Green Arrow meeting up with some other heroes of the DCU because the Flash was in the first one.
I like that. That's cool.
And it looks like this one is Wonder Woman. It's got a super cool cover of Wonder Woman and Green Arrow back to back.
I want to think where they both shoot bows.
Yeah, weirdly, yeah, she's got like I think like her like a I don't know if it's a sword. She definitely has her shield out, and he's got his bow. But yeah, especially because in the movie, archery was such a big thing for the Amazons.
Yeah.
But I guess when this was made, they probably didn't know how that was going to all play out.
Probably true.
Yeah.
They're like, I wonder if anybody's going to watch that Wonder Woman movie.
Here's a weird comic that it came out that I kind of found myself surprisingly charmed by. Betty Page number one. Now, contrary to what you might think, the legendary 50s era, maybe 60s too, pinup model, the kind of cult pinup model that adorns every head shop ever and is for tasteful pinup artists, not you internet pornographers. this is sort of an adventure story starring her, not as outrageous as the sort of Betty lookalike in The Rocketeer,
right?
Which is really sort of Betty's first appearance, I feel like, in a comic.
Mm-hmm.
But really her as herself, I think, as like a somewhat slightly heightened version of herself, the kind of down-home girl who fell into kind of modeling. But she does a photo shoot gets broken up early on by some goons looking for after this guy who's a scientist who she kind of ends up traveling with since she kind of got associated with him and is in danger too, and is like actually taken to work. He's like, oh, you got moxie and smarts, kid. He's like, why don't you come work at this think tank I'm putting together? And you know, it's a kind of a whirlwind of improbable plot ideas, but there's a certain charm to it as she ends up working there and they're doing, I forget what the research is effectively into, but it feels like a little bit like a Star Labs type situation.
Okay.
Not quite as heightened as that. It's a little bit more like pulp and then it is like big, big science fiction. But there is definitely like some science fiction elements in this. For better or worse, depending on what you're looking for, treats her as a somewhat real person and not as like a character who's just meant to be scantily clad every other page. She's a pretty girl who's in an interesting and strange adventure situation.
Yep.
I don't know. I kind of liked it. Batman 66 meets the Legion of Superheroes. If you dig on old school Legion, if you dig on Batman 66, Mike Allred and his whole family came out for this one. Lee Allred, his brother, I think, did he write it, I think, or co-write it? Lee and Mike Allred wrote it.
Is it his brother or his son?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know.
His wife, Laura, though, did the coloring, which they often have collaborated on.
Yep.
And it's a fun little story of Batman traveling forward into the future, pursuing Egghead into the future.
Sure.
And encountering the Legion, which he's completely not thrown by because Batman 66 is like, oh, yeah, sure. But it's interesting to see him kind of battling for respect with alongside Brainiac 5,
right.
Or like who's the better planner. Meanwhile, some of the Legionnaires stay in the year 1966 to work with Robin on another end of the case. Anyway, it's a standalone one-shot, lots of fun. Mike Allred clearly has a great time drawing these characters as they were kind of imagined back in the 60s, the Legion and Batman alike. So it's a very fun book.
Is there a future dance party in it?
Man, there really should be because it says swinging 60s action.
I'm saying.
It's not
a one-shot. It's a miniseries, right?
Is it a miniseries? I thought it was
just
a one-shot. That's a one-shot. It has at the end on the last page.
So there's
page.
No chance of there being a swinging 60s future dance party.
Well, it might have happened in there and I just missed it in the hasty read.
I feel like it's a missed opportunity.
Almost making my my pick this week was Aquaman number 26, which continues the Dan Abnett run with fancy new artist Stepan Sejic.
which has sort of Aquaman now teaming up with Dolphin and working alongside an Atlantean underground.
Underwater. Atlantean underwater.
There's also some sort of related politics with Volko, who's been imprisoned right now, and a question of where he's going to end up as a player on the board. It's a Game of Thrones-ish type thing without being quite as crazy Game of Thrones-ish. You get to meet a lot more of the sort of the mutation migrants that are among the underground, and they look cool. They have interesting designs, and it's a good group. There's all sorts of intrigues and spying going on, sometimes in cool magical ways. There's like this crab that's used as a spy, and it kind of like connects its two little crab claws over its head, and it's almost like that forms a little imager that somebody can magically see through. Anyway, tons of fun. And lastly, I did want to mention Tom Zoller's book, Time and Wine, from IDW.
Isn't it Time and Vine?
Time and Vine, good point. But it is a wine-based comic in its way. It's a miniseries that kicks off when a school teacher goes into a kind of a nice wine bar where she's out with her teacher friends cutting loose a little bit. And when the proprietor kind of ends up having a actually non-flirtatious but friendly conversation, takes her to show her the wine cellars down below, and she discovers that when she drinks vintage from a certain year, for a brief time, when you go back up from the wine cellar, you are in that year and can kind of mess around. And there does seem to be, he seems like he might have some history with somebody in that timeline. There's some drama and some heartbreak in here, and it's also kind of charming and is honestly a little bit for wine enthusiasts, which is a weird thing to say of comics.
Time travel wine comic, that is a genre we've not seen.
Yeah, but I feel like oddly enough, I feel like people could be into that. So
what if this catches on, like superheroes, and eventually it's like there's a whole bunch of time travel wine stories,
right? And there'll be kind of the more blue collar beer travelers.
Yes, yes. The grim and gritty whiskey and time traveler.
yeah. We're like, where do we want to go? What are you even talking about? We're going to the Old West. This is established.
What if it's not the time travel that sticks, but the wine? What if there's a ton of different genres from like Pinot and Merlot?
Yeah.
What if there's I don't know the difference between wines because I'm an unsophisticated brute.
You're a heathen.
But what if the wine genre really takes off from here?
I'm not sure that's going to happen.
I'm not either, but if it does, we look like geniuses right now.
But I do think that some folks might enjoy this book. Zoller previously did, Love and Capes?
Love and Capes, yep.
His sort of superhero romance series. He's got kind of an eye for this sort of thing, so.
I know Chris Jones is excited to read it.
If you like wine, if you like characters, if you like time travel, you are going to love this book. Or if you don't, you should go to drink some wine.
If you want to be on the cutting edge of the new genre wine enthusiast that's going to be sweeping the nation in like 2 or 3 years, get
this
on board
now.
This is the
one and only jumping on point for it.
This comic will probably be worth $1 million.
Yep. In 2 or 3 years, Marvel, half their line will be wine-related comics.
Wine comics, yeah.
They'll be like, oh my gosh, there's another mutant who generates wine as his power. He shoots it out of his eyes.
I'm glad you said eyes.
somebody was bit by a radioactive wine bottle.
It's like Wolverine, but he's got corkscrews.
So anyway, if you want to beat that, for sure.
All right, we'll be back in a second to talk about games. Real quick this week, I want to talk about games.
Yep.
And I want to start by talking about a certain Game of Thrones.
What?
Yeah. Game of Thrones is back, Dave.
Everybody saw that. Everybody knows, Randy.
I know. I'm not going to spoil anything. I just want to say that it's back for its penultimate season, and I loved that first episode back. Now, you are behind on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'm like back on season 4 or something.
Season 4 is not as far back as I thought you were. That's not too bad.
Yeah, no, it's not too bad.
You catch up. They just started season 6 or 7. It's
pretty doable given that they're short seasons.
Yeah.
It's
time to catch up, Dave. Get enthused.
I might, actually. I've been looking around for stuff to watch, and for some reason I've been having a little bit of trouble finding something that is like the one.
Well, you have my Blu-rays, so yep. You're watching or giving back.
I'm going to hold on to another year and maybe watch them. What about that?
At any rate,
most everybody I saw, by the way, seemed pretty happy with that first episode.
We are fully off book. Like, this is all kinds of stuff that's getting revealed.
I heard some singer was in it, and people are like, I saw him, and I was like, it's that singer.
Yeah, people were like, really mad about this, like, took them out of the show, and I'm like, first of all, I had no idea who he was.
Yeah, me neither.
And so when
do you have to listen to Top 40 crap?
Maybe. I had no idea who he was. And so when he showed up, I didn't think anything of it. And so when the scene... Now, in retrospect, looking back at that scene, I'm like, I thought that scene was there for a completely different reason. So I'm like, yeah, it doesn't feel like it was shoved in there or anything.
Uh-huh.
He showed up. He sang. It's not the craziest thing in the world to me. So
yeah.
People need to pipe down.
Yeah, it's... A weird thing to grasp, to glom onto.
But there was a lot of cool stuff.
I don't know what happened, but apparently Arya did some stuff.
The cold open is fantastic, and I really loved it. There's also a nice reveal about the White Walkers and some of their army, and that I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. It was really good, and I'm glad it's back. But I also played... I had one of my bi-monthly game nights this weekend, and I played a couple new games. One is one I've been meaning to get around to called Total Rickall, which is the Rick and Morty game of... it's based on that episode where there are parasites that sort of make them think that they are living... It's like a sitcom thing where there's like a butler, and that's where Mr. Poopy Butthole comes from. And it's basically these parasites that sort of move into your house and make you think they've been there all along, and then eventually they sort of take over. So you have to kill them, but you don't know who's real, and you can't distinguish. And the game is sort of a memory game where you're trying to determine who's a parasite and who's real. If you kill too many real characters, then you lose. If you don't kill the parasites, you lose. And when you play the advanced mode, which we did after our learning mode, one of you or two of you could be defending a parasite, and so you're working against the group secretly. It's a really fun game, and it's one of these cheaper games. I think it's like $15 or $20.
Mm-hmm.
Little card game, very playable. I will say, if you're not a Rick and Morty fan, you're not going to like it. The flavor is a big part of it.
Right.
But it's a solid game underneath a fun premise.
That's cool.
The game that I played that I really loved that I'm probably going to wind up picking up is a game called Dice Forge, which is built as a dice-building game,
mm-hmm.
which I thought meant, like, dice pools.
Right.
You know, you build your dice pools like right. you build your deck.
We know what deck-building games yes. are. It would just be the dice some dice variant.
So instead, this is a literal dice-building game. You have little cubes... They have little pop-out sides, like Legos almost, and you use your resources to build the dice. So you have these victory points, and then two elements, like fire and a moon, and then gold. And you want to, you basically want to build your dice so you start getting more and more of these things. Like, victory points are really important at the end of the game, but you use the fire and the moon to buy cards that give you extra things, like victory points or... other points to spend.
Sounds like it's like dice a dice faces. Arms race.
Yeah, it was really fun. I bought one early on that sort of helped me out. That was like a times three where one of my dice had been leveled up, so all the sides were something cool, and there was like multiples, and then the times three would multiply it by three if there any of it turned up. So occasionally I would get like a ton of gold or a ton of fire on one turn.
That's pretty cool.
And it's a really neat mechanic. It's one of these things that looks complicated, but was one of the easiest learning curves I've ever had. And as I played the game, I'm like, oh, I can see many different ways you could play this and strategize and that kind of thing. And
I always like when I finish a game and kind of, especially for the first time, and look back and I'm like, oh, I see all these possibilities now and I see how well-designed the game is.
I also, for my first play, and this usually does not happen, I came so close to winning, Dave. I was within 2 points.
But instead you got trounced.
I did not get trounced. In fact... The Jeff Fillion, whose game it was, beat me because he made a lucky roll at the end and got 2 bonus points.
Bastard.
Otherwise, I would have maybe tied him or beaten him.
Dice Forge is that one we've been getting back in all the yep, time lately. Yep. It is selling like hotcakes.
Yep.
Clearly people really digging it.
Hotcakes made of dice.
Yes. As everybody knows, hotcakes are the biggest selling things in the world.
Yes. That's why they're called hotcakes.
That's why all phones now look like hotcakes.
Yep. Yep, that's true. That's why hotcake fidget spinners are the hot new item.
That's right. And that's why on MASH they've redubbed it so it's Hotcakes Houlihan instead yes, of Hot Lips.
Exactly. They've gone back. They painstakingly and expensively digitally changed all the dialogue.
That was something like 800 episodes they had to go
it's
and
a lot
change.
To go and do. But, you know, hotcakes wait for no man. Yeah. All right. Finally, I do want to say one more thing, which is that Nick already covered this, but I did finally get out and see Baby Driver, and I really loved it. No surprise, because it combined, like, sort of music and
cool
car chases and hipster crime.
Yep.
And was basically, like, directly aimed at me.
Yes. They might as well have just had that as a tag at the end of the... Or, like, the mate rated R for Randy or something
yes,
like that.
Yes, rated R for Randy.
I believe also if anybody is, like, on the fence about it, there's a... they officially released the first 5 minutes to the internet so people can go check out the kind of a jazzy opening sequence. That's really cool.
Car chase.
It's a car chase. It's got music and all that stuff. It's a really good opening sequence. I've not seen the movie yet, but I did think that was a really well done sequence. So if you want to go and just see what all the hype is about, get a sense of whether you're going to dig it, they went ahead and put it all out there. They're like, here's the first 5 minutes.
Watch it.
Watch it. And then go watch it.
All right, that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.